Following months of anticipation, President Cyril Ramaphosa has taken the stand at the state capture inquiry, appearing in his capacity as former ANC deputy president and as the current head of the ruling party, amongst many other things, acknowledging that members of the party have engaged in acts of state capture and corruption for a number of years has emerged. And political analyst Daniel Silk joins us now with his impressions of this first appearance. Thanks so much, Daniel, for your time this evening. So we had all eyes on President Cyril Ramaphosa Pause today as he started off with the obvious that state capture happened under the watch of the ruling party. What have you made of what's come out today relative to where your expectations were set?
Yes, look, I think that what we saw today was a very carefully penned and worded initial statement from President Ramaphosa, and in fact his reaction to the various questions that followed for most of the day were equally guarded and carefully dissected word by word from his side. There were no sort of silver bullets in what we heard today. It's not as though the president was really prepared to admit that these issues happened on his watch, his personal watch. We saw a degree of obfuscation, I would also argue. We saw also a softy approach from the team leader and from Judge Zondo as well. It was really quite a convivial, warm and fuzzy kind of presentation and day at the Zondo Commission for the president. I dare say if you're president of South Africa, you get to be warm and fuzzy in this kind of instance. But I think that there are many unanswered questions that remain. And the questions really are, the fundamentals of what did the president know? What did he do about it? And what systems can be put in place to circumnavigate or prevent this in future? He went on at length about those issues, but I don't think there was anything really concrete that South Africans got from the evidence, at least from today.
Absolutely, because, you know, through his testimony, he attributed state capture took off in a party because of the divisions that existed or manifested in the ANC since 1994. Those divisions are still there, like it or not. They're still there, Zuma or not. So, you know, does this point to a strangled hold still, even if it might not be as tight as it once was?
Yeah, I think, you know, he tried to lay the blame on the internal factions within the ANC, which made the ANC susceptible to state capture. But clearly, there was very little oversight at all. Very little oversight from a variety of cabinet ministers, from a variety of senior office bearers. And you could argue there was very little oversight, of course, from the president at the time, President Zuma, and for that matter, President Ramaphosa, who was deputy president. So I think that whilst the president tried to, in a sense, deflect blame onto factionalism, he also, towards the end of the day, spoke about a sort of a systemic failure within the ANC. And I think that was more important in really admitting that there was widespread failure across the board. And perhaps that was the most the strongest admission of guilt that we heard during the course of the day.
Daniel, so where he says that, you know, corrupt ANC members won't be protected by the party, do you believe him? This is politics at the end of the day, and we know that he's been walking a very fine line since his appointment.
Yeah, you know, he hinted that it was difficult to really act on state capture because there was a fine balance of power within the ANC. And there still is a relatively fine balance of power within the ANC. And the evidence today is given within the context of the unresolved issues of the Secretary General Magashule and the former state president Zuma, both still facing legal action and both still facing some sort of accountability. It's unfinished business. So you can only really assess the wish list that the president came out with today in terms of how he will see issues going forward. You'll only be able to assess that really in 2, 3, 5 or even a decade's time to see whether this sort of almost rose-colored view of where the ANC is and where it's going to be in future really comes to fruition.
Yeah. What it threw into the spotlight, or what it throws into the spotlight, Daniel, is the fact that we've got an ANC policy of deployment of its members into the public service. We've had the president maintain and defend the fact that this is an important part of implementing the ruling party's mandate. Do you agree?
Well, the there was a lot of the day was spent on this issue of deployment, cadre deployment, and there was an intricate discussion as to whether this was beneficial to the country or not. Certainly, you know, one could very well argue that the conflation of party and state, the ANC and the South African state, has in broad terms led to the susceptibility of state capture. Whilst the president will want to blame it on factionalism, one could very well argue that it is the appointment of inefficient individuals mm-hmm. to very senior positions who themselves then become susceptible to patronage and crony-based politics. And I think the question really is whether this issue of a cadre deployment policy that is so damaging for South Africa, can it be turned around? Can it be tweaked by the Ramaphosa administration? And of course, even if it is tweaked, it really needs somebody like Ramaphosa to drive this for years and years to come. So a lot of the good that the president talks about that's now being done and new plans being instituted, that really requires a very, very fine and ethical leadership call in the ANC to continue this to the future. And who knows how the ANC as a political party is going to shake out over the next few years.
Yeah, he's argued, Daniel, that you know, the political deployment of members to civil service is practiced widely by many governments across the globe and for good reason. What exactly is the logic there?
Well, I think, you know, in the technical sense, the president is right. All governing parties do apply a certain amount of supporter cadre deployment in the civil service. After all, if you're expected to carry out government policy, you want civil servants that are generally amenable to that policy. Otherwise, they can become obstructionist. But I think the clear issue is that many of the deployees who were appointed have largely used their position to gain some sort of largesse and exercise patronage and to accumulate assets and riches in the process. And the issue will be really to try and distinguish those who serve South Africa from those who serve themselves and only the ANC. And that's the real challenge for the ANC going forward.
Yeah. Daniel, you talk about obstruction to mandate, but on the other side of the coin, we had the president maintain that the party admits to having made mistakes as it sought to execute a mandate that it was given by its voters. How much of that scenario has really changed, though? All we have to do, one would think, is point to the public sector wage negotiations to see that you've still got the tail wagging the dog.
Well, the ANC is a complex political party. It's made up of all sorts of different strands, ideological strands, strong individuals, those with certain histories, and those with certain personal agendas. The ANC hasn't changed as we speak here. And all of those divisions and all of the fissures within the ANC really are largely unresolved. And we haven't even taken the issue of broader economic policy into account. So we're just dealing here with the one issue of state capture. Those other problem areas that really threaten to undermine the ANC's cohesiveness absolutely still remain, no matter what the president's evidence is at this commission.
Yeah, let's leave it there, Daniel. Thanks so much for having joined us on the line this evening. That, of course, political analyst Daniel Silk.